وهو العزيز الغفور الذي خلق سبع سماوات طباقا ما ترى في خلق الرحمن من تفاوت فارجع البصر هل ترى من فطور ثم ارجع البصر كرتين ينقلب إليك البصر خاسئا وهو حسير ولقد زينا السماء الدنيا بمصابيح وجعلناها رجوما للشياطين وأعتدنا لهم عذاب السعير وللذين كفروا بربهم عذاب جهنم وبئس المصير إذا ألقوا فيها سمعوا لها شهيقا وهي تفور تكاد تميز من الغيظ كلما ألقي فيها فوج سألهم خزنتها ألم يأتكم نذير قالوا بلى قد جاءنا نذير فكذبنا وقلنا ما نزل الله من شيء إن أنتم إلا في ضلال كبير وقالوا لو كنا نسمع أو نعقل ما كنا في أصحاب السعير فاعترفوا بذنبهم فسحقا لأصحاب السعير إن الذين يخشون ربهم بالغيب لهم مغفرة وأجر كبير وأسروا قولكم أو اجهروا به إنه عليم بذات الصدور ألا يعلم من خلق وهو اللطيف الخبير هو الذي جعل لكم الأرض ذلولا فامشوا في مناكبها وكلوا من رزقه وإليه النشور أأمنتم من في السماء يخسف بكم الأرض فإذا هي تمور أم أمنتم من في السماء أن يرسل عليكم حاصبا فستعلمون كيف نذير ولقد كذب الذين من قبلهم فكيف كان نكير أولم يروا إلى الطير فوقهم صافات ويقبض ما يمسكهن إلا الرحمن إنه بكل شيء بصير أمن هذا الذي هو جند لكم ينصركم من دون الرحمن إن الكافرون إلا في غرور أَمَّنْ هَذَا الَّذِي يَرْزُقُكُمْ إِنْ أَمْسَكَ رِزْقَهُ بَلْ لَجُّوا فِي عُتُوٍّ وَنُفُورٍ أَفَمَنْ يَمْشِي مُكِبًّا عَلَى وَجْهِهِ أَهْدَى أَمَّنْ يَمْشِي سَوِيًّا أَهْدَى أَمَّنْ يَمْشِي سَوِيًّا عَلَى صِرَاطٍ مُسْتَقِيمٍ قُلْ هُوَ الَّذِي أنشأكم وجعل لكم السمع والأبصار والأفئدة قليلا ما تشكرون قل هو الذي ذرأكم في الأرض وإليه تحشرون ويقولون متى هذا الوعد إن كنتم صادقين قل إنما العلم عند الله وإنما
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم صلوا على محمد وآل محمد Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters, Sheikh Osama. Thank you for joining us again tonight. Inshallah, tonight's program is another nightly program, inshallah, with lectures with Sheikh Osama. To start off our program today, inshallah, we'd like to welcome Brother Muhammad for some recitation from the Holy Quran. Please help me welcome him with a loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
ثانية على حب الزهراء أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم نون والقلم وما يسطرون ما أنت بنعمة ربك بمجنون وإن لك لأجرا غير ممنون وإنك لعلى خلق عظيم فستبصر ويبصرون بأيكم المفتون إن ربك هو أعلم بمن ضل عن سبيله وهو أعلم بالمهتدين فلا تطع المكذبين ودوا لو تدهن فيدهنون ولا تطع كل حلاف مهين هماز مشاء بنميم مناع للخير معتد أثيم عتل بعد ذلك زنيم إن كان ذا مال وبنين إذا تتلى عليه آياتنا قال أساطير الأولين سنسمه على الخرطوم إنا بلوناهم كما بلونا أصحاب الجنة إذ أقسموا ليصرمنها مصبحين ولا يستثنون فطاف عليها طائف من ربك وهم نائمون فأصبحت كالصريم فتنادوا مصبحين أن اغدوا على حرثكم إن كنتم صارمين فانطلقوا وهم يتخافتون أن لا يدخلنها اليوم عليكم مسكين وغدوا على حرد قادرين فلما رأوها قالوا إنا لضالون بل نحن محرومون قال أوسطهم ألم أقل لكم لولا تسبحون قالوا سبحان ربنا إنا كنا ظالمين فأقبل بعضهم على بعض يتلاومون قالوا يا ويلنا إنا كنا طاغين عسى ربنا أن يبدلنا خيرا منها إنا إلى ربنا راغبون كذلك العذاب والعذاب الآخرة أكبر لو كانوا يعلمون إن للمتقين عند ربهم جنات النعيم أفنجعل المسلمين كالمجرمين ما لكم كيف تحكمون أم لكم كتاب فيه تدرسون إن لكم فيه لما تخيرون أم لكم أيمان علينا بالغة إلى يوم القيامة إن لكم لما تحكمون سلهم أيهم بذلك زعيم أم لهم شركاء فليأتوا بشركائهم إن كانوا صادقين يوم يكشف عن ساق ويدعون إلى السجود فلا يستطيعون خاشعة أبصارهم ترهقهم ذلة وقد كانوا يدعون إلى السجود وهم سالمون فذرني ومن يكذب بهذا الحديث سنستدرجهم من حيث لا يعلمون وأملي لهم إن كيدي متين أم تسألهم أجرا فهم من مغرم مثقلون أم عندهم الغيب فهم يكتبون فاصبر لحكم ربك ولا تكن كصاحب الحوت إذ نادى وهو مكظوم لولا أن تداركه نعمة من ربه لنبذ بالعراء وهو مذموم فاجتباه ربه فاجعله من الصالحين وإن يكاد الذين كفروا ليزلقونك بأبصارهم لما سمعوا الذكر ويقولون إنه لمجنون وما هو إلا ذكر للعالمين صدق الله العلي العظيم صلى على محمد وآل محمد
Send Brother Muhammad, if we could get another loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali.
Inshallah, our program will continue tomorrow. Doors will open as well as 6:30, inshallah. Also, we wanted to let you guys know to please stay updated for the Layalatul Qadr and the Majalis for this upcoming week through our social media channels and other WhatsApp group chats, inshallah. Inshallah, we will be playing a clip. Inshallah, if we could introduce it with a loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
ما در کنار مردم فلسطین هستیم. ما در کنار مظلومان فلسطینی هستیم. البته مظلومیت ملت فلسطین فقط از سوی صهیونیست ها نبود. اون کسانی که چشم روی هم گذاشتن و دست روی دست گذاشتن و این مظلومیت رو با بیتفاوتی و خونسردی تماشا کردند هم در مظلوم کردن مردم فلسطین سهیمند. اون کسانی که به نام مردم فلسطین حرف زدن اما عملاً هیچ کاری برای مردم فلسطین انجام ندادند هم در این مظلوم کردن شریکند. اون کسانی که نسبت به آرمان فلسطین خیانت کردند مثل بانیان کمپ دیوید و سردمداران رژیم مصر، اون کسانی که با اونها سازش کردند مثل بسیاری از سردمداران کشورهای مرتجع منطقه، و اون کسانی که آمادگی خودشون رو برای ارتباط با خائنان به آرمان فلسطین اعلان کرده اند، اینها به نظر ما دشمنان فلسطین و خائنان به آرمان ملت فلسطین اند، هر کی میخوان باشن. ما در مسئله فلسطین بر روی دو نقطه اساسی تکیه میکنیم. نقطه اول اینه حقوق حقه فلسطین که اینقدر در قطعنامه ها، در کنفرانس ها، در طرح ها از اون دم زده می شود، چیزی جز دولت فلسطینیان و حاکمیت فلسطینیان بر فلسطین نیست. خیال نکنن که حقوق حقه ملت فلسطین اینه که مقدار اعانه جمع کنن یا یک حکومت تصنعی با همکاری نوکران سنتی آمریکا در همسایگی فلسطین اشغالی و زیر چتر قدرت صهیونیست‌ها به وجود بیارن، اینا حقوق حقه فلسطینه. حقوق حقه فلسطین اینه که بر سرزمین فلسطین باید خود فلسطینی‌ها حکومت کنن. اعراب فلسطینی صاحبان این سرزمینن، خودشون باید دولت تشکیل بدن و بر این سرزمین حاکمیت داشته باشند و دولت صهیونیستی باز منحل بشه و از بین بره. نقطه دوم اینه نقطه نظر دوم ما در باره فلسطین اینه که صلح با صهیونیست ها به هر عنوانی مردوده. صلح یه جورم نیست. بعضی ها صلحشون با صهیونیست ها مثل کمپ دیوید، آشکارا با صهیونیست ها سر میز مذاکره می نشینن، بعضی به این وضوح صلح نمی کنن. صلح کردن با صهیونیست ها در قالب طرح‌های گوناگون، در چارچوب قطعنامه های گوناگون از هر سازمانی به وسیله هر کسی ارائه بشه مردوده و ما این رو قبول نخواهیم کرد و یقین داریم ملت فلسطین هم صلح با صهیونیست‌ها رو در چارچوب هر قطعنامه و هر طرح و هر مصوبه‌ای باشه یقینا رد خواهد کرد و قبول نخواهد کرد. به عنوان دولت و ملت جمهوری اسلامی از دو نظر برای مسئله فلسطین اهمیت قائل هستیم. اولا چون تکلیف اسلامی ماست که سرزمین متعلق به مسلمانان چون در اختیار کفار و مخالفان و معاندان به غصب و زور قرار گرفته، اون سرزمین رو باید استنقاص کنه. ثانیا از باب این که یک ملتی مظلومن و ندای یا للمسلمین بلند کردن و از مسلمون ها استمداد کردن، وظیفه ما و همه است. بنابراین مسئله فلسطین یک مسئله اسلامی است برای ما و مال همه مسلمون هاست و ما به عنوان مسلمان برای این مسئله اهمیت فراوانی قائلیم. هر جریانی هم در هر کجای کشورهای عربی مخصوصا در داخل سرزمین های غصب شده و اشغالی فلسطینی ها که به معنای واقعی کلمه بخواد مبارزه کنه، نه به نام مبارزه، نه به نام آزادی خواهی و در معنا اسارت طلبی، نه به نام فلسطینی ها حرف زدن و منافع اونها رو در نظر نگرفتن و منافع گروهی و شخصی خود رو در نظر گرفتن، نه، اون کسانی که صادقانه بخوان برای فلسطین مبارزه کنن در هر جا باشن مخصوصا در سرزمین های اشغالی ما در کنار اونها هستیم و تا اونجایی که مقدور ما باشه به اونها کمک خواهیم کرد.
صلوات على محمد وآل محمد. Inshallah, we all do our responsibility and join the group of families, brothers, sisters, children on Yom al-Quds, inshallah. And the flyer will be shown, inshallah, maybe later. And also, it's on our social media pages that's run by Al-Quds Committee, inshallah. With that being said, if we could please, if you could please help me welcome Sheikh Osama with three loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي. Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Welcome back. I hope everybody is doing well. We have started this series and it's talking about, or it's described as, the victorious lion of Allah. That's what we're talking about, Amirul Mu'mineen. What we're trying to do in this series are the four following points. One of them is we are trying to learn how to introduce the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, to ourselves and our children. One goal. The second goal is the idea of reforming ourselves. Instead of just hearing the exploits of Amirul Mu'mineen and what he did and why he was so great, when we hear these stories, we're looking to find ourselves and see how we can better ourselves. Thirdly, we want to see if there are principled stances of Ali that we can adopt, that we should be having in our lives. And then fourthly, we want to see if the unique way that Allah introduced our first wali to us, if this helps us understand the importance of wilaya. Those ahadith that talk about wilaya apply to our current wali. The maqam of Amirul Mu'mineen is such that even anbiya aren't like him. But look at some of the ahadith. The hadith says this, and you see maybe 25 hadith with this same meaning. Buni al-Islam ala khams. Islam has been built on five things. As-salah, prayer. As-zakah, charity. Al-hajj, was-sawm, the pilgrimage, the fasting, wal-wilaya. And one of the pillars of the deen is wilaya. And then the imam says this, walam tunada bi shay'in ma nudiya bil-wilaya. But you've been called to nothing. Nothing has been emphasized the same way that wilaya has. So we're trying to see now our practical responsibilities when it comes to our wali. We're also trying to find that out as well. Now, about the first point, the idea of trying to introduce the Ahlul Bayt and let them be true role models. I want to mention another point about that, and then inshallah we'll get into the story. That's another way. But one of the points that we're supposed to do, we hear this from our scholars, when it comes to introducing the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, in the right way. Number one is that we parents are supposed to be the most loving to our children, the most best friends of our children. Number two, we're supposed to model the correct teachings of Ahlul Bayt in their lives so they see a practical example of the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, and to really try not to go against the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt ourselves. That the person who introduces Ali, he or she goes against what Ali says. That would be a tragedy. What's going to happen is they tell us if we can model the right behaviors, we're going to be addressing the fitri needs of our children. I'm going to give some examples. And then after that, we're going to explain to our children the reason your needs are being met in the right way is because of Ahlul Bayt. Example. The first one was, I mentioned the idea of making sure that we're loving. That our children feel both beloved and that they can demonstrate their love to us. They grow up in that warm, loving household. And then later you and I say, well, Ahlul Bayt taught us how to be this way. Number two, the Ahlul Bayt example. The Ahlul Bayt have taught us to play with our children. Let's say we have small children, children who are under 7. To play with our children and to be a child while we're playing with our children. This is a very wonderful effect on the child. When I see mommy or daddy, and then now instead of being mutakabbir, when they're playing with me, they also become a child. Then later I hear, Ali alayhi salam, he told you to be that. I as a child have experienced this. I see this. I appreciate this. Another example. Another thing that we're supposed to do is to make work to make sure that the relationship between the husband and the wife is very warm in our household. So the children, when they see that father and mother are doing very well, they see how loving they are to one another. This gives the child a deep sense of security. The relationship of the parents gives the child a sense of security. When I find out, as a child, I grow up and I connect the dots, I find out again, I'm indebted to Ahlul Bayt because they were the ones who taught my parents to do this. That's why I feel so safe and secure. Again, this helps with building that relationship with Ahlul Bayt. Now, salawat please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. What we're going to try to do today are to cover three very, very important things. One of them, by the grace of God, we had the tawfiq to talk about the Battle of Badr yesterday, the role that Ali played in that Battle of Badr. But there's some very important life lessons. I want to mention one that's positive, and then also one that we have to be careful about that we get from the Battle of Badr. That's one. Number two, we also want to talk about, because now we're on the second year of the Hijrah. According to some narrations, Amirul Mu'mineen gets married to Sayyida Fatima. So we want to talk a little bit about that marriage. And then, again, each one of these things are things you could spend a whole lecture talking about. We want to talk a little bit about that marriage that they had, and then how you and I can experience in our personal lives that kind of a life, like the life of Ali and Fatima. And then finally, we'd like to talk about the Battle of Uhud, and then to see if there's any lessons that we can derive from this as well. But we'll start with salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, the reason that the Battle of Badr is so important is because it was so impossible. Normally, when you look at the situation of the believers, big picture, the believers are going to fight a caravan, not a battle. They're outnumbered 3-1. The enemy has experience. They're warriors. The Muslims are farmers. The Muslims aren't experienced warriors. They're outgunned. The believers, the vast majority of the army, didn't even have swords. They had sticks. The enemy had a psychological edge over the Muslims. 13 years, they had been beating the Muslims down in the 13 years of Mecca, right? So when you're always getting it, you're always taking it, you're not the winner. Psychologically, the other side has an edge on you. Now back in our own personal lives, There are times when God will put certain challenges in our way that literally they seem impossible. But we're going to see a secret that Ali explains. It played itself out in the Battle of Badr, but you and I want to ask a question. How do we get God's help in this way? What happened in the Battle of Badr? Again, just some examples. There are so many things. These are many of them verses of the Quran that let you and I know how God came to the assistance of the believers. The reason that the Battle of Badr is different is that the miracles that happened over there, we don't see this many miracles happening in other battles. This was incredible. God wanted this to happen. For instance, one of the things that God did in order, ayat of Quran, in order to make this battle happen was that the believers, when the Prophet saw that dream, he saw the enemy as few. So the believers, it gave them confidence, right? What else? The descent of the malaika, another thing that's referred to in the thing. God made the believers doze off. Remember that they had marched about 95 miles. Now you're there. You came to fight a caravan. You find this army of champions. There, they had done everything right to defeat the believers. Some of the believers panicked. What did God do? Ayat of Quran. Again, God made the believers go to sleep. Before the battle began, that light rain came that I spoke about the other day. Right? The enemy, God even went over and did this. Before the battle began, God made the believers see the enemy as few. They're outnumbered 3-1. But the God made the believers see the enemy as few. He also made the enemy see the believers as few so that they would feel encouraged to start the fight. Then once the battle started, God made the believers seem like they're twice their number. Right? So all of this helped in order to make the believers experience God's best. How do you and I get that to happen? How do we get God to move mountains for us? He moved it for those believers in that time, but for you and I, we're looking for practical examples. There are challenges that we face, times when we feel overwhelmed. What can we do when literally the walls are closing in on us? But if we do this, then we can tap into and access that special mercy from Allah. This is a hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen. He says this, فَلَمَّا رَأَ اللَّهُ صِدْقَنَا. When God saw our sincerity and our truth, that we had put it all on the line, we were trying with everything we had, every bit of potential we had, we put that out there at His disposal. Now it's just us relying on them. God, the Amir al-Mu'mineen says this, أَنزَلَ بِعَدُوِّنَا الْكَبْتِ. God made defeat come down on our enemies. Those walls, those doors, those problems that you and I feel with our own power, there's no way of making them happen. When God sees our sincerity, He opens those doors. He made defeat descend on our enemies. وَأَنزَلَ عَلَيْنَا النَّصْرَ. And then He made victory descend upon us. So you and I, we need to make sure we're doing that. But there's another challenge too. The believers had a huge error. And I want to recite some of the verses of Quran about this. The believers didn't finish strong. The believers made a critical error. God had set everything up for the believers to experience God's best. Amir al-Mu'mineen doing his responsibility. All of those miracles that I mentioned, everything was set up for the believers to win. And in the beginning of the battle, after Ali killed those champions, the main battle began. Ali handed the Prophet that dirt. He threw it into the face of the enemy. The wind flowing from the back of the believers, believers from an elevated position. The battle begins, and then at that stage, the enemy starts to run. This is the time now. There's a point that we have to learn. That point is learning to finish strong. I'm going to share the hadith. To finish strong. There are times when believers start a good project, perhaps start a marriage, start a business, but then along the way, believers get tired. What happened to those believers as they were about to experience Allah's best, and now they're Instead of finishing off the enemy, the believers decided to take prisoners. They started capturing the enemy. This is the best time. I told you that the brains and the thinkers of the enemy, the major, the Jeff Bezos of the world on the enemy side, those guys were there. The victory of Islam that's going to happen after the conquest of Mecca, the spread of Islam, that could have all taken place so much earlier. But the believers started to go over and to get prisoners. They didn't finish strong. And the ayat of the Quran talk about this. This is Surah Anfal. It says this. مَا كَانَ لِنَبِيٍّ أَن يَكُونَ لَهُ أَسْرَى. It is not lawful for a prophet. Because they didn't get permission from the prophet. They just started getting their prisoners. It is not lawful for the prophet to have prisoners. حَتَّى يُثْقِنَ فِي الْأَرْضِ. Until he establishes himself in the earth. God says, تُرِيدُونَ عَرَضَ الدُّنْيَا. You want the transient goods of this world, وَاللَّهُ يُرِيدُ الْآخِرَةَ. But God wants the hereafter, وَاللَّهُ عَزِيزٌ حَكِيمٌ. And God is wise, he's invincible and he's wise. The second verse of the Quran says that if it wasn't for the decree of Allah, the believers would have faced chastisement right there. لَوْلَا كِتَابٌ مِّنَ اللَّهِ سَبَقٌ. If it wasn't for a prior decree of Allah, لَمَسَّكُمْ فِي مَا أَخَذْتُمْ عَذَابٌ عَظِيمٌ. You would have faced a serious chastisement for that which you took. So the Prophet says it this way. He says, إِسْتِمَامُ الْمَعْرُوفِ أَفْضَلُ مِنْ ابْتِدَائِهِ. Finishing a good deed, starting a good project, but then continuing with the same strength, even stronger as we move towards the end, this is even better than beginning it. Now, the next thing that happened in the life of Ali that was also spectacular was the marriage between Ali and Sayyida Fatima. This was one of the brightest points in the life of Ali. From this marriage, you're going to find that those children who changed the world, they were results of this marriage. Imam Hussein, Imam Hassan, Zainab, right? The children are a result of this marriage. This marriage was such that God performed the ceremony in the heavens, and the Prophet performed it in the earth. And when you look at this marriage, there are so many lessons that one could take from it. Both the simplicity. Remember, Amir al-Mu'mineen, when he approaches the Prophet and he asks for her hand, the Prophet says, how much money do you have, or what did you bring for marriage? And Ali doesn't have money. What does Ali have? I have my sword. I have my shield. I have the camel, or in some of the narrations, the horse that I use for bringing water, taking care of my responsibilities. And the Prophet accepts for the woman who is the best of the women of the world. Ali doesn't have. If you look at the gift of the Prophet to his daughter when they decide to get married, the mahar of Sayyida Fatima, again, examples. The advice of the father-in-law, the Prophet, to his son-in-law. Right? He gave advice. That's also been recorded. The ceremony, all of these things, the words that they said about one another. Right? When the Prophet asked them to describe one another, how did Amir al-Mu'mineen describe Sayyida Fatima? He describes her in this way. He says, نِعْمَ الْعَوْنَ عَلَى طَاعَةِ اللَّهِ. That she is an excellent helper when it comes to the obedience of Allah. Because that's what Ali is looking for. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, what I'd like to do is to see again if we can make this something that again, instead of us only talking about their glory and how wonderful they were, what are some lessons we can get from this? Are there any ways, any things that could be shared that if we were to do them, some of that joy that Ali and Fatima, they experienced, we could also experience? Is there a way of doing that? I want to share 5 points that if they're taken advantage of or taken properly, if they could be done right, then we could have those warm and inviting homes. Now, there's no way to go over and explain on them all the proper way, but at least as a reminder, at least the idea of moving in that direction of Amir al-Mu'mineen and Sayyida Fatima. But before I do that, there's another point that needs to be stated there, if we want to live that life like the life of Ali and Fatima. That is the point of making sure that you and I, this is now for that husband or wife who'd like to experience God's best, we focus on our personal flaws and personal responsibilities and not that of others. If I'm waiting for my spouse to do their responsibilities, these are five things, this is great, they should do them, I hope they hear, then that's again, we're not taking that advantage, we're not getting that lesson. The first thing that we learn from Amir al-Mu'mineen, this hadith, actually two of them from Amir al-Mu'mineen, both of them important if we want to experience God's best, is this. One of them is, Ali says this, Ya ayyuhannas, O people, Tuba, blessed is that person, he or she, liman shaghalahu aibuhu an uyubin nas. Blessed is that person who is distracted by his or her flaws from the flaws of the people. Selfish people, people who can't break the curse, are people who look and they're always blaming others for what went wrong. If you would do, if he did, if my wife, if my parents, if everybody, but not me. The way of the Imam, the way to experience God's best, before we even go into the things, is I want to focus on my flaws and my responsibilities. How do I better myself? Are there any of these five points where I could perhaps be doing better so that at the very least, I make my house that warm and inviting home for my children to experience and see that marriage is a success, for my spouse, them to be able to go to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? So that's one of them, advice from Ali. The other one from Ali is this, and this one again is helpful when we do marry non-ma'sumeen, because most of us, we're not like Amir al-Mu'mineen or Sayyida Fatima, that you end up married to a ma'sum. We're married to regular people, people like me and you, people who have flaws, people who have problems, people who have issues. What is it that Ali taught us that if we keep this in mind as well, this also helps us to experience God's best? Ali says this. This one's really important. Man nasiya khati'ata. That man or woman who forgets his or her flaws. That person, and you find this, they forget their flaws. They come to you with a list of the things that the other person that's doing that isn't right. But what are you doing that's wrong? Your issues. I don't have that list, but this person needs to get this together. The Imam says this, the person who forgets his or her flaws, something terrible happens to that person. Ista'zama khati'ata ghayrih. The person who's not working on themselves ends up thinking that the mistakes of the other person are unbelievable. Istadhama. They think, this is so terrible. How could you do this? Don't you have a brain? Now, why is that the case? Very briefly, if you and I are people who are concerned with bettering ourselves, with changing ourselves, I don't know how many brothers and sisters have experienced this, that you and I, sometimes we do have a point where we sit and we kind of want to reform ourselves. We identify certain flaws in areas that we could be better. We identify them. Is it usually the case that you and I, once we've identified an area, I could be better in this way, we just snap our fingers and then we're a different person? Usually for most of us, even if I know this is a flaw, I should be better this way. I should have more ikhlas. I should only work for God. Right? It's usually not the case that it's just a matter of snapping my fingers and then now I'm one of the mukhlaseen. It's jihad and it's long jihad, even though this is me working on myself. Keep that point in mind. If that's the case for you and I, for ourselves, should I expect that if I give my spouse a reminder,
immediately I snap my fingers. I give them the reminder and I snap my fingers. Be a different person now. I just told you the hadith. Back to the words of the Imam. The person who forgets themselves and their flaws and how difficult it is to reform yourself. I might know something is wrong. This person thinks, how can you make that mistake? We look at the other person. We also tend to not think our mistakes are such a big deal. But the way of Amir al-Mu'mineen is that I look at myself. My mistakes are intolerable. I have to work on them. There is never an excuse for doing wrong, but it allows me to be a little bit more accepting of the mistakes of others. Now, back to that house, which is like the house of Ali and Fatima. Right? That warm house where children come out. Because whether you and I are perfect, our children are born on the fitrah. Hadith about this. Our children were born on the fitrah. A huge part of the person who plays a role in shaping the personality of the children, according to hadith, are the parents. So I want them to... So now, what am I supposed to do? I'm focusing on my responsibility in order for me to have that warm and inviting home. There's a couple of things that I need to make sure that I'm doing. The first thing is to make sure that we have a home where we freely express our love to our spouse. We tell them how much we care about them. We make sure they feel loved, right? Because we're focusing on our responsibility, my duty, not what everybody else is doing. Am I doing my part so that my spouse really feels loved, appreciated? That I express myself, it's not just when it's Valentine's Day, or right? I'm always that kind of a person who is making sure that I do that full effort to go over and tell the person that I love them. Talk about it. Mention it. Mention in front of my children. So loving, being loving. Number two is the idea of respect. Our children are supposed to get from us the idea that the respect of the mu'min or mu'mina is more than that of the Kaaba, hadith. Where do I learn that the respect for the mu'min or mu'mina is more than that of the Kaaba? From watching my parents interact with other mu'mineen and mu'minat. Do I make sure that no matter what my spouse has done or hasn't done, literally, they feel around me respected? Or do I let down my guard? Now I'm comfortable. I don't behave in such a way that that person feels respected. So that's number two. And again, these things need more explanation. Appreciation, number three. Appreciation. The way of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, was that if I receive a blessing of Allah, I have to thank God. لَأَنْ شَكَرْتُمْ لَأَزِيدَنَّكُمْ But the way of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, is that you can't just thank God. You have to thank the wasila. Otherwise, it doesn't count. Question, what blessings am I? As a mu'min or mu'mina, receiving through my spouse on a daily basis. Do I notice those blessings? Do I thank God for each and one of those blessings? Do I thank them? Or is it now the case that, for instance, if my wife makes me dinner, then, well, that was her job. She better. If my husband is working and providing, that I thank him, that I appreciate that. And every other part of a married life, the idea of a family being such that I'm looking for God's blessings, it's never become ordinary for me. We've been married for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, but the blessings I'm receiving from Allah through my spouse, they haven't become ordinary for me. And I notice them. My husband took out the garbage today. And I make him feel like a hero. My wife did the laundry today. Imagine that couple who goes over and makes sure that they notice each and every blessing that I'm getting from Allah through this person and thanks them and appreciates them. Imagine the children who grow up in this household where I'm constantly seeing myself as blessed, as receiving Allah's blessings, noticing who is the means of me getting to them. The other one they tell us needs to be there in order for us to experience Allah's best is trust. Trust. There are two things that take away trust in a family. And if trust is lost, a lot is lost. One of the things that takes away trust in a family is su'udhan, or suspicion, when I always have second thoughts about why somebody's doing something. What are you really up to? Su'udhan, when you do something, what's it really? Or I think badly of the person. I'm expecting bad of the person. The hadith of Ahlul Bayt tell us that if you are expecting good from people, this creates love. Because normally, those people who we love, we give them other chances. We think they must have a good reason for what they just did. The other one that the Ahlul Bayt caution us about is the idea of lying. And sometimes, people do tell white lies. The thing that happens if we lie is that God afflicts liars with forgetfulness. My lies come out. And lies end up making that house be a house where the trust is not there. So that other one is also there. And then, of course, the idea of a house which is literally one of the houses of Allah, a house of spirituality, where there is never a case that this believer or mu'min or mu'mina will openly defy Allah's wajibat. And just pick and choose with Allah's religion. And just, right? A house of spirituality, the very beginning, the foundations of that house, is that never should it be the case that something's wajib or haram. And this mu'min or mu'mina can simply do it and not. So those are some of the things that we need to do in order to experience Allah's best. Now, we'd like to talk a little bit about, again, one of the great battles, and again about one of the times when Ali shone. What happened was, because the believers hadn't done their responsibility the first time, and they hadn't wiped out the enemy, as the verse of the Quran said, the Prophet was not allowed to take prisoners until Islam had established itself. Because of that, the enemy came, and they wanted a piece of the Muslims. This is now the revenge battle. By the way, there have been skirmishes in between, but this is the revenge battle. We're going to take revenge for what happened in Badr. So what happens? The enemy march on Medina, and this time with 3,000 men. They're going to wipe the Prophet out. Armed to the teeth, ready, going to perform their responsibility to take the Muslims right off the face of the earth. The Prophet, when he got this information, he consulted with the believers. He knew that the Quraysh hadn't come out in preparation to have a battle where you have to lay siege on a city. They hadn't come with catapults, for instance, to take down the walls of Medina, to break down a fortress. They didn't have these things. The Prophet's opinion was that we should fight inside the city. But he consulted with his companions, and the companions said, no, we want to fight outside. The Prophet agreed. They go to fight outside, and the Prophet's this time been able to muster 1,000 men. Alhamdulillah. Moving to go and take on the enemy. In the middle of the way, the leader of the Munafiqeen, Abdullah bin Ubay, he says, I'm going to take 300 guys back. I had a different opinion. You didn't agree with my opinion. So now when the believers are about to face the enemy, the believers have either 600 according to some accounts or 700 men versus 3,000. And now open defiance of the wali of the time. He leaves the battlefield and now the believers are over there facing these enemy. Now, again, the Prophet organize the believers. He knew still, because our prophet was a military genius, he had a way for the believers to win. There was one area where the believers could be hurt from. There was a pass that was left the believers vulnerable. The prophet saw that and he put 50 archers over there and he told those men, he said that you have to hold the line. If we win and wipe them out, you don't move from this spot. If we get wiped out, you don't move from this spot. 50 archers, prophet put them over there. And then the believers went out to go. Ali, again, the champion. Ali ready for them. In the Battle of Badr, Ali had been so deadly and so ferocious, the enemy had started to name him Red Death, Al-Mautul Ahmar, because of how he was and how ferocious he was. So Ali comes out now, and this time the Quraysh have said, well, we figured it out. Abu Sufyan's now the leader, because Abu Jahl has been killed. Abu Sufyan gives the standard to a tribe, the tribe of a man called Talha ibn Abi Talha. And this man was a champion, the ram of the battalion, huge man, champion, experienced warrior. He told this man, he said, the reason we failed in the battle of Badr, the previous battle, was the standard bearers. Our standard bearers, they weren't able to hold the line. They broke. They ran. The people ran. He told Talha, he said, if you and your tribe can't hold on to this, if you can't do this responsibility, then I'll give it to another tribe. So Talha was furious. Talha said, no. He came out looking to get one of the believers, and nobody wanted a piece of Talha bin Abi Talha. Calling for someone to go over and challenge him, and Ali came, reciting epic poetry. Apparently, Ali's face must have been covered because Talha bin Abi Talha said, Man anta, who are you? And Ali said, I'm Ali bin Abi Talib. And then Talha said, he said, I knew if there was anyone who would be bold enough to fight me, it would be you, Qadim. He called him by his childhood nickname. The battle began. It was so ferocious. Ali swinging, fighting, till Ali cut off both of Talha's legs from the thigh. Talha falls to the ground and Talha begs Ali, don't finish me. Some of the Muslims wanted Ali to finish him right there. He said, don't worry, he's not recovering from that. The standard has fallen. One of his brothers gets it. The tribe, they're going to fight. Ali hits him, takes him down. Another, five brothers trying to hold the standard, fight against Ali. Ali finishes all. Four other individuals from the same tribe go over. They pick up the standard. Each one of them tried to come against Ali. Against, they get downed until finally a slave came. And this man was a beast. Su'ab. The Imam, when you look at the things, they say that eyes red, mouth foaming, huge man comes to pick up the standard. Ali cuts off his right hand. He picks up the standard with his left hand. He cuts off his left hand. He picks up the standard with the nubs of his arms. And then Ali chops him in half. Then the general battle begins. The enemy aren't able to keep up with the believers. The believers start to win. And now the believers are mowing down the enemy. The enemy starts to run. Ali and the other champions, Hamza, others, chasing the enemy. And some of the Muslims, they said, well, they're throwing away heavy armor, good equipment. Some Muslims went and they started to grab the things the kuffar had left behind. So some of the Muslims are chasing the enemy, killing the enemy, following them, trying to finish the battle. And some Muslims have started. What happens, it became an epidemic. Other Muslims started doing it. So you still have some who are doing their responsibility, chasing the enemy, but other Muslims are picking up. The archers saw. The archers saw. They said that, but they're over there and they're getting these things. We will get left behind. The commander said, we're supposed to stay here. We win or we lose, we stay here.
We're winning.
They ran down. Now Khalid ibn al-Walid was an experienced warrior. When he saw that the Muslims, of course, there are some over there fighting as ferociously as they can, but these are the, right? And some of the Muslims are picking this up, and now there's no archers. Then Khalid came with those cavalry through that pass. There's only 12 of the archers left. Khalid comes charging. They try to stop them. They can't stop them. They wipe out the 12 archers, and then they come and attack the Muslims from the rear. Those Muslims who've now put down their weapons, picking up things, other Muslims chasing, but now you're chasing them and you're running this way, trying to finish them off. And Khalid comes from the rear on horseback, killing the believers, swords, spears. And this attack is so surprising. Some of the Muslims start to fight each other and kill each other because we're running this way. Other Muslims getting killed right there trying to get the thing. And the Muslims start to run. Something else terrible had happened. The enemy had figured out some of the bravest of the Muslims, some of the most influential of the Muslims, and they had put a price on their heads. Wahshi, that guy who could throw the javelin, he had been told, either get Rasulullah if you can, get him. If you can't, get Hamza. And if you can't, get Ali, one of those three. So Wahshi said, he studied the battlefield. He said, I couldn't get to the Prophet. In the beginning of the battle, there's too many people around the Prophet. He says that I wanted to get Ali. But he says, Ali was like this. He's more alert than a wolf. He's always aware of everything that's around him. So even if he's charging towards the front, if you try, I have to get close enough to be able to throw the javelin. I can't. But he said, Hamza, Sayyid al-Shuhada. He said, when he was fighting and he had that ostrich plume, so you knew who Sayyid al-Shuhada Hamza was, he would get so angry at me finishing off so many of the mushrikeen, he would concentrate on the person he was fighting and he wouldn't realize who was creeping along in the battlefield waiting for him. So he crept along while Hamza is over there trying to finish as many of the enemy as he can. And he throws that javelin and he gets Hamza. So now what happens? The Muslims are in disarray. Some of the Muslims over in the front, some of the Muslims start to run. And this is one of the times where Rasulullah got furious. He said, Ilayya inni Rasulullah. Come back, I'm the Prophet, what are you doing? Where are you running from Allah and His Messenger? And the Muslims were running for their lives. Ali's now in the front, in the forefront, taking as many as the enemy as he can out. Ali comes darting back across the battlefield. He's got to make sure the Prophet stays alive. Ali's running back. Now what happened is, so many of the believers had gotten injured. This is one of the stages where our Prophet has to fight himself and defend himself. Normally, I'm alive, we never let the wali of the time, he doesn't take any blows, but now the Prophet, the Prophet's injured. The rumor spreads, the Prophet's been killed. So now panic, and believers are running for their lives. So Ali comes back. Finds the Prophet. And then now Ali versus the army. And now the enemy is trying to find itself because they're chasing different believers and stuff like that. They start attacking the Prophet in waves. And Ali was fighting ferociously, fighting people on foot, fighting people on horseback. They said the fighting was so intense. Amir al-Mu'mineen fell to the ground 16 times. He was fighting 60 wounds later on when they tried to patch Ali's body. They said his body was a wound. Fighting so ferociously, waiting off the enemy, attacking from one side to the other, fighting till Ali's sword breaks. And that's where he gets the sword, Dhul-Fiqar. Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. In the end, that ferocious fighting of Ali, not allowing the final line to break, that allowed for the believers to start returning and for them to be able to get the Prophet to safety. But we end, inshallah, with salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
San Sheikhna, inshallah, excited to hear the next lecture tomorrow. Inshallah, please join us at 6:30. Thank you all for joining us. Salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم تبارك الذي بيده الملك وهو على كل شيء قدير الذي خلق الموت والحياة ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا وهو العزيز الغفور الذي خلق سبع سماوات طباقا ما ترى في خلق الرحمن من تفاوت فارجع البصر هل ترى من فطور ثم ارجع البصر كرتين ينقلب إليك البصر خاسئا وهو حسير ولقد زينا السماء الدنيا بمصابيح وجعلناها رجوما للشياطين وأعتدنا لهم عذاب السعير وللذين